Hi, everyone. Thanks. And this is to Abby. That was fantastic. And I actually learned a lot during that, so that was great. So now that we sort of know the background, the rules of what defines advocacy, lobbying, grassroots advocacy, I'm going to talk about a little bit about sort of what we do at APHA and sort of why advocacy matters. Now that we know the rules behind it, why do we do it? Why do we want to listen to a presentation about advocacy and the rules? You know, what's the importance of, what are the important opportunities that we can gain by through advocacy? I'm also going to talk a little bit about how to get involved, our advocacy activities here at APHA, and then some of the resources that we offer. So let's talk about why advocacy matters. The first thing, as Abby sort of touched on this a little bit at the beginning of her presentation, members of Congress listen to the views of their constituents. And that, you know, may seem sort of self-explanatory, but as their constituents, you all serve essentially as their bosses. You determine whether or not they're going to be there another 2 or 6 years. If we're talking about the House and the Senate, if you're talking about your governor, your state legislature, you determine how long they stay in office and sort of what their time in office is going to be like. So what you have to say should matter to them. I say should because clearly we're, you know, in a little bit of a political climate now where that doesn't necessarily always seem to be the case. But the views of their constituents, the views of the people that they represent, should be the reason that they do their work every single day. And for a large majority of people that we're talking about, it is what they care about. Again, why advocacy matters. Public health needs a voice. We're talking about the budget debates that are going on now. I'm going to touch on this, some of this a little bit later. When we're talking about sort of the cuts that are happening to the CDC and HRSA and other public health agencies and programs across the board, these aren't things that you necessarily always see on the front page of the New York Times. When we're talking budget cuts, a lot of times the stories that we're reading are about the Department of Defense, the Pentagon. Education programs, other really critical programs, but public health programs somehow don't always seem to rise to the top. So as advocates, we need to be the ones talking about why these programs are important, what their constituents are gaining from these programs in the communities, and sort of what the programs do. Advocates help shape the national debate when we're talking about this, and most importantly, advocates help educate members of Congress and their staff. I'll talk about some of this a little bit later in the presentation when we talk about sort of what a meeting with your member of Congress might look like. But when you go in to talk to staff or the members themselves, you're really talking about what these programs do in your state and your district. We've seen sort of firsthand in some of our lobbying activities over the last year is that a lot of members of Congress and staff, especially new members who were elected last year, they don't know a lot about public health. And I'm not talking they don't know a lot about sort of research and facts and, you know, what's happening and, you know, what is CDC doing, you know, on a very minute level. They don't know what public health is. They've maybe never heard of CDC or heard of it as like, oh, isn't it that big thing down in Atlanta that does something with outbreaks? I'm not really sure. They probably maybe need some money. I don't really know. They don't know what community health centers do. They may not know what Title X is, family planning programs. And I'm not saying this necessarily as a criticism. Members of Congress are dealing with issues, federal programs, everything from education to labor to defense to public health programs. They just don't necessarily have time. But their staff, we're seeing, even the staff devoted to healthcare, you know, you may be meeting with a healthcare staffer who's spent their entire career working on Medicare payment policy. That public health issues don't necessarily always rise to the top of their portfolio, but they're responsible for bringing their boss, the member of Congress, information on these issues. And, so you become a resource for them, and you also are there to raise concerns that you see in your district and concerns with potentially their past voting records, and also to share thanks for those members of Congress that have been with us, that have taken some tough votes, and that have been longtime supporters of public health. It's important to thank them and to let them know that their constituents appreciate the work that they're doing and, you know, the lengths that they're going to protect these important programs. So again, the budget climate that we're in now requires members of Congress to prioritize programs. We're seeing this very much when we're talking to some of our longtime champions of public health. They're having to take a lot of very tough votes right now. And speaking out in support of funding, in support of, you know, either ideally increasing funding for these programs, let alone just stable funding year to year, is not exactly the position that a lot of members of Congress want to be in. There is a lot of people in our country right now, there are a lot of people who their sole goal, all they see is a federal deficit, reducing the deficit, cut programs. They don't necessarily understand that when you start cutting these programs, when you're taking, members are taking these votes, when they're cutting programs at CDC and HRSA by 20-30% year to year, the impact that that's having on people in their state and the impact that that's going to have on health concerns across the country. So again, champions need to know that they have support from the community, and those members who are unsupportive need to know that their constituents care about and will defend these programs. One of the main questions that we get all the time when we send people to the Hill from APHA is, you know, I'll throw out one of our biggest champions, Senator Tom Harkin. From the state of Iowa, he was sort of the he was basically the creator of the Prevention of Public Health Fund and health reform last year, longtime champion of public health. Someone from Iowa, we have someone from Iowa coming in, they're a fantastic affiliate. You know, why do they necessarily need to go meet with Senator Harkin? He's always going to be with us. Why does he need to hear about the importance of public health? He gets it. He knows he put $15 billion into health reform for public health and prevention issues. Well, Tom Harkin needs to know that, he has the support of the community, that we appreciate what he did, that we get it. We know that that wasn't, you know, the easiest thing for them to put into health reform, and that it's going to need protecting in the future. We've already seen one of our two biggest priorities this year is protecting the Prevention and Public Health Fund. And we've seen the House has passed bills several times this year to eliminate the entire fund. And we're seeing proposals coming out every day to reduce the funding by $3 billion, $2 billion, $1 billion every year. So those votes are, you know, members are going to need to take votes. And when they do that, and when they see the Prevention and Public Health Fund pitted against something really important in their district or their state, they're going to have to make choices and prioritize that. So they need to know that we care about these programs and we're with them. On the other side, we get members coming in from states that say, why would I need to go meet with my senator? He's voted against every public health bill. He wants to cut the deficit. Maybe he's a member of the Tea Party and this is not an issue that he's ever going to be with us. I'm just going to be talking to a brick wall. Well, we need to go talk to those members of Congress too. If they don't hear from their constituents, if they're unhappy with their voting records, what incentive do they have to ever change them? If they never hear that there's a problem with what they're doing and that the constituents in their districts don't necessarily agree with them, they have no reason to take a look at these votes and to sort of step back and consider what their votes are doing to their districts. As I mentioned, some of them may just not know what these programs are. Some of these members may just not be aware of the important sort of benefits that these programs are having at their state level. And you also never know when you're going to get a member of Congress or a staff member. You're talking to them about CDC or you're talking to them about a specific program and you say something that all of a sudden really resonates with them. Maybe you're talking to a staff member who has a grandparent that has suffered from arthritis and that this is an issue where they get it. And when you start talking to them about specific funding for research on arthritis programs or different programs that are happening at their state level that are helping with rehabilitation for their grandparents, well, maybe that's an issue that they're going to take to their boss and be able to say, okay, maybe we don't want to increase funding, you know, on these 10 programs, but here's a program where maybe we can, you know, introduce a piece of legislation or maybe we can become a co-sponsor of this great bill that's out there because this is an issue that we really support and we see what's happening back in our district. So let's talk a little bit now about how to get involved, and we can certainly take questions on this at the end if you have specific questions about your district. I think one of the best ways to start when we're talking about where to start is to seek out information about legislative activities. And part of that is really looking for key moments in the legislative process. The House and the Senate are on sort of these weird schedules where now they're sort of in a week, the House is in a week, out 2 weeks, in a week, out 2 weeks, and then over the summer they're gone all of August. The Senate works a little bit differently, but all their schedules are public on the House and Senate calendars online. So you can look for sort of when they're going to be in session. If you happen to be in D.C., look to see if they're going to be in session and if that might be a great time to come meet with them. If not, you can look and see when they're not in session, they're back home in their districts, you know, unless they're on sort of congressional delegation trips. For the most part, they're going to be home in their districts, which is where you live, and you can try to set up meetings with them while they're home. Staff is always working, so staff is always going to be in D.C., either in D.C. or back in the state working, so you can sort of look for opportunities to meet with them based on the calendars. If there's a great new set of data that has been released by department in your district, or if you work for an academic institution, you're releasing some new information that's going to be, that really impacts, you know, either the state where you live or national issues. This is a great opportunity to bring it to them and to talk about maybe potential legislation or just to educate them on the issue in general. So that's sort of an overview of that. Setting up a meeting with your members of Congress in D.C. or back home in your district, again, check calendars. They're always, August, I'll talk a little bit about our August recess advocacy program, but most members of Congress are going to be back home in their districts from sort of end of July through early September, sometimes on an election year. This will last through November. So they technically are supposed to be home listening to their constituents, talking to them, holding town halls, being available to meet with constituents to talk about these issues. This year we sort of saw some new challenges with members of Congress not holding town hall meetings. We had hundreds who just never held a town hall meeting for the entire month of August. It's obviously disappointing on many levels that you don't get, you know, as advocates, it's hard to run programs targeted at this time if they're not going to be open to listening. And it's unfortunate because as constituents, this is an opportunity that they're supposed to provide to you to be able to sort of share your grievances, ask your questions, and talk to them about what they're doing in Washington and how it's impacting your life. If there are events happening, it's always great. The members always have these events on their website. So find something to attend, ask questions. I'll talk about the resources that we provide because we have sample questions that you can ask. But just find an opportunity to have access to your member of Congress. They are having sort of, you know, they'll have events in parking lots to talk about, you know, informal town halls. They'll have coffees. They'll have open houses at their office. And you can ask, you know, with opportunities, they're very informal to just talk to them about these issues. Another great way that we've seen a lot of success, is anyone here from our Montana affiliate? Okay. They have submitted they were on sort of a letter to the editor rampage over the summer. And they had, in the last 2 months, I think they've had 7 or 8 letters to the editor submitted on the importance of public health programs and the importance of funding these programs. Montana is a great example because they have 3 members in their entire congressional delegation. On the House side, their member is the chair of the Appropriations Subcommittee that handles all of HHS programs. So obviously he's somebody that we want to be talking to when we're talking about public health funding. And one of their 2 senators is sitting on this super committee, the Joint Select Committee on Deficit Reduction, Senator Baucus, who's obviously going to be one of the key people in determining what our budget is going to look like or what our deficit reduction program is going to look like over the next couple of years. So think about who your members of Congress are and think about how we can influence them based on the committees that they sit on, based on the work that they've done in the past, and where they might be able to be influential with their colleagues. So just a couple of highlights of the advocacy program that we run here at APHA. The FACT campaign, the Public Health Advocacy Campaign, is, again, our annual congressional recess advocacy campaign. And we work really closely with our affiliates and our state-based advocates, again, because this is happening out in the states, not happening in D.C. We offer everything from sample letters to the editor and sample op-eds that you can literally just insert sentences on, specific dollar amounts that are going to your state or any specific programs that you want to mention. We offer sample questions to ask at town hall meetings about public health funding. We have a whole website dedicated to this that's also just part of APHA's advocacy website. You can find information on, letters to the editor, op-eds. You can find state fact sheets with sort of different data information from the public health landscape in your state. We also have links to both CDC and HRSA state funding pages so that when you go to meet with a member of Congress you're going to advocate, you can print that off and you can say, so last year in Illinois we received $23 million from CDC. If we're going to talk about cutting that by 20% next year, what does that look like for our state? What does that look like for the programs that we're going to be able to implement that we aren't going to be able to implement this year that we were going to be able to, that we had last year? What does that look like for vaccination programs for kids? How many fewer kids are going to be able to get vaccinated this year because we cut those programs? It's sort of taking it from this 30,000 foot, like as I said, dollar level, which sort of makes more sense of where you need to cut the deficit by X amount to what does this actually look like for our state when we're talking about these? Because again, these are things that members of Congress aren't necessarily focused on. They don't have the time to pull the numbers, and it's easier just to sort of look at the big picture rather than to drill down and see the actual impact that this is going to have on your district. Again, some of the things that Abby mentioned as well that she found on our website, we have our action alerts, which say take action, so you can determine whether or not you think that's lobbying, a call to action. We have letters to Congress, all the letters that we've sent to the White House to different federal agencies, so you can look and see where where APHA has weighed in on different issues. If you want to find out, if you saw something in a newspaper that you thought was interesting, you want to see if we weighed in and sent a letter on it, we post everything up there. We also have a lot of information, again, about meeting with your member of Congress. We set up meetings when members come to D.C. We have APHA members come with their sections and their affiliates. We set up members for them and do all the scheduling. Because of the number of people that are at the annual meeting, did not schedule any meetings for people coming here. We just sort of set that as an early policy. But we do have at our advocacy booth, I'll just give a little plug for that, which is up in the expo in number, it's in the 4,000 section. We have packets and are hoping that advocates will take those and go to the Hill and go meet with their members of Congress while you're in D.C. I know it's a little late now to schedule meetings with them in the next couple of days, but we really do encourage you to take a packet, to stop by their offices. You can always walk in the door, say you're a constituent. We have a whole list. You can figure out who your members are up at the advocacy booth and where their offices are. Stop in, ask if the healthcare staffer's there. They might have 10 or 15 minutes to chat with you, or even just a couple of minutes in the hall. You can just go in and say, hi, you know, I'm from your district. I am involved in public health. Here's some information I want to share with you, and give them a little bit of background for that on what you're able to do. And that's a great thing to do since we're here. There's maps up at the advocacy booth as well, so if you're interested, you can stop by and ask questions afterwards or pick up a packet up there. So I'm going to get through the next one, so we have lots of time for questions at the end. So again, for meetings with your members of Congress, so the research has been done on this. There was just a big study that was done last year that sort of looked at the different advocacy tools, action alert, letters to the editor, meetings, going to town hall meetings, and study of congressional staff, what they found to be the most effective way for advocates to get their message across. In-person meetings are always far and above the most effective way to advocate. You're sitting down, you're talking to somebody, you're able to have a conversation, you're exchanging information, and they're able to ask you questions. You become a resource for them. You're able to talk to them about how you see these issues happening in your state, and you're able to share examples and stories. I think we've had somebody come to one of our sessions yesterday and say, you know, is there too many times that you can go back and keep meeting with the same person? You know, do you sort of become, you know, an over-advocate? Is there a way to sort of start over-advocating for some of these? And I'll answer that sort of question the same way that I answered yesterday. When I worked on the Hill, I worked for a member of Congress from Oregon, and there was one advocacy group in the state that was fantastic. Whenever they were in D.C., they always came by to talk to us. I had a great relationship with them. They were always sharing new information. They just always, they stopped by probably, you know, once every few months whenever they were around. Well, one day my boss came to me and said, you know, I'm interested in introducing a piece of legislation. Let's try and write a bill on this. It's the issue that they had come and advocated on many times. It wasn't something that I had an extensive background in. So I called them up and said, okay, you guys are great advocates for this program. I trust what you have to say based on our conversations and based on the great resource that you've been for me. If you had to write a piece of, you know, a bill on this, what would it look like? What kinds of things are important for you all to see in this? Your constituents, because you're from my state, so I care what you have to say as constituents, and that you're a resource for me. So as advocates, that's what you become for members of Congress and for their staff. You're just a huge resource with the information that you provide. Again, be prepared to answer questions. It's always okay to say that you don't know the answer to a question if you're meeting with a staff member and they try to drill down on something. It's a great opportunity to follow up with them again afterwards to provide any additional information as well. So again, some of the resources that we provide, I think I've now mentioned all of these throughout throughout the different slides. A couple other things that we provide that we also have copies of in the advocacy booth, vote records on public health legislation. Every year in our February Nation's Health edition, we publish a vote record for every member of Congress. And we score, we usually pick 5 or 6 different votes across the year, so depending on what they voted on. This year, the House has given us a plethora of votes to look at already. They tried to repeal the Affordable Care Act, I think, 6 or 7 times, so we'll score, and we'll pick a couple of those votes to score. score. But you can look and see how your members did last year. You can take that to them. You know, don't want that to be the only way that you consider how they voted, because obviously some of these pieces of legislation, you know, get very into the details and get tricky. But it's a good way to say, you know, a 0 or 100% is a pretty good indicator of where your member of Congress has been on these issues. And again, action alerts and all of we get a lot of questions from members on the action alerts. Every time a bill is introduced on a public health issue, we usually get an email saying, can you put an action alert on your website for this? We obviously can't do that for every issue, because we would have, you know, a running list of thousands of action alerts, and at some point it just becomes, you know, ineffective. But all of our action alerts have a section in the middle, if you go to our advocacy page, where you can edit them and you can add in sentences about your own program. So if we have something on public health funding in general, you can go in and say, you know, I work on X CDC program back home in my state in Mississippi. Here's why it's really important to us that you vote on, you know, on how you vote on this. So we always want to provide that opportunity for you to talk about specific issues or specific programs happening in your state. Okay, so we'll turn over to questions, and I'll open it up. Abby and I will take a seat and go right ahead. Sure. I'll moderate. Go right ahead.
Can you talk about corporate form and activities for lobbying? There's been a lot of attention to the Occupy Wall Street, the Libya, the Middle Eastern groups that have just sort of organized for a specific issue and then disbanded. And we don't know whether some of these will organize for a series of sequential issues. So the question is, unless you're fundraising for some of these issues where you're not fundraising isn't really essential, do you need to be in a corporate form? And that's what I'm out of the group outside of the environmental health lobbying. Right now, we've sort of decided that we don't need a corporate form because a corporate form limits us, whereas, and then everybody says we're not legitimate because we don't file papers.
Right.
I keep on telling them,
no, it's a really good question about whether you need a corporate form to do your work. And as we see, you know, groups like Occupy Wall Street and others sort of popping up, the benefit of a corporate form is being able to raise money. And if you're not planning to raise money, if you're not planning to get donations, it's not as important. The other, you know, and you can also, there's some groups that will serve as a fiscal sponsor or fiscal agent. And so, you know, Occupy Wall Street actually is working with, under the umbrella of some organization, that if people do want to donate, that they're giving their contributions to that organization. And the other thing about corporate form is that there is some liability protection. So if you're offering service, you know, I'm not sure I would want to open, you know, provide health clinics or provide direct services without having a corporate form because of liability. But there might be cases under your state law about volunteer protection and other things. So an organization is not always necessary, and you don't need to create an organization to do everything. And it is something to really think about before you develop a new corporation to see whether it's necessary. Yeah. Sure. So the first question is, you know, how close to the line can you get? And if you're talking with a legislator and sort of implying something, and the answer is, it depends. There really is no clear answer. You know, the definition is expressing a view about specific legislation. You know, talking about your unhappiness with budget cuts, it depends how specific you are. And are you talking about budget cuts to health programs in general? Are you talking about budget cuts to this particular program? And we could have, you know, six different lawyers give you seven different answers on that. And so some of it has to do with sort of a culture of your organization and what how close to the line you want to get, how comfortable you are with risk, and you know, a bigger issue is not so much, you know, I think lately, so much the IRS in terms of are you exceeding your limits, but how controversial an organization are you? And is there, are you, and the more effective you are, the more you're working on controversial issues where there are groups who don't like you, and there are groups who are working to sort of take you down, or who, you know, don't like your opinions, that's when you want to be a little bit more cautious. But the question about elections and what can 501c3 organizations do around elections in terms of educating candidates, in terms of educating the public, it's a great question, and we could spend, you know, a lot more time on this. That you can provide information to the candidates. So you could have material and you could go and give to all the candidates or all the candidates for a particular race and say, you know, this is what, these are the issues that are important to us. Or this is the platform of issues that we really care about. We hope you take these into consideration. You want to offer that to all the candidates. You can talk about the issues that your organization has been talking about, that's the importance of the organization. But what you can't do is you can't try to set the candidates apart based on the issues. So as a 501c3 organization, you need to be really careful if you're criticizing a candidate's views on policies, or if you're commenting on a speech that they just gave, or commenting on something they said in a debate, because it could look like you're sort of suggesting that they're good or bad on the issue. And so it's an area that you do need to be careful about. There are some ways that you can continue to talk about the issues. It's important that you keep the focus on the issues and not on the candidates, not on the election. But we do have a lot more resources, and you can call and we can talk about more specifics. When it gets to elections, sometimes it does get real fact specific. Yeah. Sure. So the question about health departments at the state and local level. And that is going to probably be my fine answer, it depends as well, of how they're actually, of what their status is. And that, are they a sort of freestanding entity? Are they an agent, a government agency where they're like the, you know, where in many cases they probably are an executive branch agency. And so most of the time, most of the work that you're doing with health departments probably is not lobbying at the, under these federal definitions because they're not dealing with specific legislation. So if you're working with the department on their policies, on their programs, on carrying out their work, that's probably not going to be lobbying for the under these 501c3 rules. Oh, okay. Sure. It's going to depend, again, and some of it's going to depend on state rules. Some of it's going to depend on the grant or the, you know, if they're working under federal, if they have a federal contract that they're sort of that's passed through to them, that some of it won't be, it won't be lobbying sort of in the way that we're thinking about lobbying, but some of what they do as a health department is communicate to other health agencies and community, and so some of it is sort of the work inherent in the work that they do and isn't necessarily considered to be lobbying. And so there are ways that health departments would need to be careful, I think, in that they would not necessarily be able to put out action alerts and say, call your legislator and tell them to support this bill, but in the work that they're doing, that they would be able to have input into that.
So if we want more details, can we call you?
Sure. Yep. Yeah.
Is there any restriction on APHA itself regarding advocacy in the media? I don't see in the mainstream media any advocacy for it.
Is there any restrictions in?
As a member of the APHA.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. From
APHA
in the mainstream media, I don't see.
Sure. We do a lot of, that's a question I guess more for our press department. If you're talking sort of media in terms of television ads, that would be mostly a cost issue. I just don't think that we, generally speaking, I've only worked at APHA a year, so I don't know if there's a historical sort of background behind why we don't have a lot of TV ads, but I would imagine most of it is just that the cost of putting something up on television. But we do a lot of work with, our Dr. Benjamin and now Alan Baker, as he's for the next couple of months. It's quoted all the time in national papers, New York Times, Washington Post, some of the more local DC papers, or even some of the state papers. We do a lot with sort of op-eds, letters to the editor. So that our media strategy, we do have one with radio. We have a very large social media presence, and it's all sort of advocacy-based. But with TV ads, I think it is actually, this morning as I was getting ready, I saw ads from the American Medical Association, and was thinking, that'd be a nice APHA ad, and I'm just assuming that it's a cost quite a bit of money to put something like that out. So.
For the common people, it's the most powerful.
Sure. Yeah. Absolutely. Well, I can definitely check with our press department on that, because they would be the ones in charge of.
Actually, that's where we are defeated. That's where we get defeated.
Yeah.
When it comes to the competition between for and against of a health program, we are beaten by the television ads.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I can definitely check with our communications staff on that. That was my unofficial answer.
Sure. I don't know.
I have a question on health. We are working on an issue in Minnesota about integrating foreign trained health professionals who are community refugees and immigrants into the healthcare system. And I was just wondering, how do we go about bringing it more at a national level? Because
sure. I think that would be a great opportunity for you to talk to your local representative.
We're doing that already. We're talking with it, but this should be a national issue because it is a national issue.
Right, and that's sort of where, when I mentioned sort of how advocates help shape the national debate, in an ideal world, you would bring that to your member of Congress in Minnesota. They would talk to their colleagues from Kansas and California and everywhere else, and they would start to talk about these issues. That doesn't necessarily always happen on public health issues. But I would encourage, colleagues that you have in other states and sort of across the country.
I think public health association
bring it as an issue. Absolutely. We can talk offline after this about specific advocacy issues, but I guess I will just...
I support that because I also know there are many physicians who work in public health, like breastfeeding program, who are unemployed and is working sometimes in gas stations, and their expertise nobody is interested in, but you can utilize their expertise free, of course.
Mm-hmm.
They'll be very glad to work. I know people, myself, I know one person who was the chief of the Bangladesh Breastfeeding Foundation, and she was running the national and institutional program, and she wanted to volunteer, but nobody.
Let's talk often because we're actually out of time now, but I mean it's definitely important she can chat afterwards about that.
Well, great. Well, thank you
so
much.
Thank you very much.
Great.